Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shiurim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Katshalom. We're now beginning the seventh chapter of Masechet Gittin. And as I mentioned in the previous podcast, we will do the Mishnah on Daf Samach Zayin Amud Bet, Mishnah Aleph, a short piece from the Gemara immediately following it, and then immediately go to Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph, where the analysis of the Gemara begins. And the intervening section is a long series of tangents about medical cures, because that's where this thing starts, and about interactions between certain individuals and the Reish Galuta's house, and about Shlomo's search for the Shamir worm and his interaction with Ashmudai, the king of the demons, and further medical cures that are both far too voluminous for this forum, and will take us far, far afield from the issue of Gittin. So I will leave it again to the interested student to research and to study those passages on his own. Mishachzo kordiakus. Now, kordiakus is evidently from the Greek word kardiokos, which has to do with a believed to be a disease of the heart, which is some sort of a temporary suspension of lucid thought. Oh, we might call temporary insanity. So if somebody is seized by this, from our kit v'get lishti, and in this state, he says kit v'get lishti, so fairly obviously, lo amar klum. We pay no attention, we don't write a get. Amar kit v'get lishti v'achazo kordiakus, if he gives the order while he's sane, and then he's seized by this state, chazar v'amar lo tichtevenu, and while in this state, he says, don't write it, ein dvar v'achronim klum. We pay no attention to the last word. We'll see what that means in practice, but it doesn't mean that we will write the get. Now, a separate issue is nishtatek. Let's say a person becomes suddenly seized with muteness. He's unable to speak. He had evidently been directing them to write a get, but not issued the formal commission. And then they asked him, shall we write a get for your wife? And he nodded with his head. We check him three times. If he answers to questions that obviously beg for a negative answer, and he answers by shaking his head, and when you ask him a question that begs for an obviously confirmative answer, he nods his head, then we understand that he's understanding us, that the problem is simply one of verbalization. And then, when we ask him about the get, and he signals again in the affirmative, then they can act based on that. Now, the first question the Gemara asks is, my kordiakus, and Amar Shmuel, that he was hurt by some of this kind of wine that was right at the beginning of the dregs or something. So why doesn't the Gemara say it that way? So to tell you that when you get seized by that as a result of drinking that kind of wine, it's called kordiakus. Now, who cares what it's called? Well, in our day, we would say, I care a lot what it's called, so I can give the proper prescription based on that diagnosis. In their times, leukemia, writing a proper amulet that evidently need to have the name of the disease. My asute. So what's the cure for this disease? Bisra sumka agumre, red meat that's right on the coals. The chamra marka, and wine that is soupy, meaning wine that has been very diluted. Right? And that's the part that we care about now. We know what this kordiakus is. We know how to heal it, if we can properly identify it, and there we go. Now go to Daf Ayin Amud Bet. Amar kit v'get li ishti v'achzo kordiakus v'chazar amar al tichtu v'ein dvav rachonim klum. Okay, so we saw that we don't pay any attention to his retraction if he says it while he's under kordiakus. Now, Amar Rosh Lakish, kot v'invim in get l'altar. In that case, you give the get immediately. V'yochar amar en kot v'in elach shi ishtafet. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you got to wait till he gets better, then you write the get. Now, my Talmud Rish Lakish, why does Rish Lakish say you can write it right away? Diktani, ein midvar v'acharim klum. It says you don't pay any attention to his retraction while a kordiakus, and therefore you just continue as if he said nothing, and originally when he was well, he said write the get. Rabbi Yochanan, why does he say, ein midvar v'acharim klum, meaning we pay no attention to his last phrase, meaning to the chimitza, when he gets better, lo tzarech l'me'ador amluchi be. You don't have to ask him again. In other words, we don't take these words into account and say, well, which is it, buddy? But in any case, we do not write the get until he's better. Now, what is their disagreement really about? Shlokesh says the guy is like a sleeper. He's asleep now. Why? What does that mean? If a person says write a get and then takes a nap, you can write the get while he's napping, because he's perfectly capable. He's just asleep right now. Rabbi Yochanan medami le'shota. Rabbi Yochanan says no. He's temporarily like a shota. Now, if a person's a shota while they're a shota, he can't write a get on his behalf, even if you have clear instructions when he was lucid to do so. So now, Rabbi Yochanan nami lead me liyoshin. Why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan compare him to a sleeping person? Yoshin l'machus ha'maisa. A person asleep has nothing in barring him from being competent. They just have to wake up, which will naturally happen in any case after a time. Hai machus ha'maisa. This guy needs the treatment, which is the red meat and the wine. Rish Lakish nami nid me l'shota. So why doesn't Rish Lakish compare him to a shota? He says, shota lo sami biadan. A shota is somebody we can't cure. Hi, Sam Biadan. This one we have a cure, which is Bisra Sumka Gumre, the red meat on the coals, V'chamra Marka, and that's soupy wine. Right, so we know how to cure him, just like a sleeping guy. We know how to wake him up. In other words, he's not out of our control, so he's more comparable to a sleeping person, and you can write a get on behalf of a sleeping person while he's asleep. Umiyam Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, since when did Rabbi Yochanan say that we compare this fellow to a shotev? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shachat po shnaim or rov shnaim. Let's say that a person had two or most of both of his simonim, which is the carotid and the jugular, cut, which means we know he's going to die. V'ramazvim rakit v'gad lishti, and he couldn't talk, but he made a motion to say, righty get to my wife, harei elu yichtu v'yitnu. And evidently Rabbi Yochanan accepted this. We don't have to write Rabbi Yochanan's name here at all, so it's a question of why is it a challenge to him. But the reason is really from here, Tanya, Ra'uhu Miguyano Tsaluv Alatsliva. Let's say that they saw a fellow who was crucified. Ramaz Vamakid Vuget Lishti, and he again signaled somehow to write a get. So why would Rabbi Yochanan say that if a guy indicated that a get should be written, that we can't do it until he's back in position, which in this case is not going to happen? So the answer is Hachiash Tahatam Data Tsalutahi. In the case of the guy who's been slaughtered or the guy who's been crucified, his mind is capable. He's just starting to die. His body's starting to die, but his brain is still there. So therefore, whatever he directs, he just can't talk, so he's signaling. However, here, the fellow's brains are cooked a little bit. He's a little mixed up, and therefore we can't rely on it. Now back to Shmuel, who said that halacha, since when did Shmuel say that if a fellow's carotid and jugular are cut, you can write a get based on his signals? From Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shachat bo shnaim or rov shnaim uvarach. Let's say that a fellow was cut in that way and then ran away from the scene. Me'idim alav. Then we can testify. People who were there and saw him can testify that he's dead. His wife can marry. If you think that the fellow's alive, so he can command and direct the get be written and have it get written while he's in that state. Am I me'idim alav? How can they testify? Well, the answer is quite straightforward. The answer is right now he's alive, but he's clearly going to die very soon. So therefore, if this guy is cut and then runs away, you can testify within a day that he's dead. So if that's the case, that he's going to die, why then, if somebody cuts him in such a way inadvertently, somebody has a blade, they're working in the forest, and the blade slips out and cuts two of their simonim, and the guy's still alive, but he's going to die, why doesn't the negligent woodchopper go into galut as a result? Salama tanya shachar b'shnaim rov shnaim harei zeh eino gola. We have a clearer teaching in Makot that somebody does not go into galut for that. The answer is hayit marala. We have a statement about the Mashiach, chayshin an shem aruach bil belto, because we're concerned that perhaps after you cut him, the climate outside kind of pushed his death and made it sooner. So you weren't really the direct cause of his death. You were the direct cause of making him mortally wounded so that the weather or something else could have finished him off. So inami who cured mitato. The other possibility is that he might have started acting spasmodically, and being mefarches, as we call it, and therefore he caused his own death to happen. Meaning, again, you set him up and mortally wounded him, but he finished the job, or the weather finished the job. So my benai, what's the difference between these two approaches? Benai with the shachta beveta the shisho for your case. If you shachted him inside a marble house with no window, so there's no wind, But he was spazzing, in which case only the second version would agree that you should not go into galut. Inam reshachted b'barav, you shachted him outside v'lo pirches, but he dropped and he died, and he didn't move at all. Then the only thing you could say is that the weather did it, so only if you accept the weather version, then you would not go into galut. All right, so then the second half of the Mishnah asked the question, Tateg v'amrula nechtov get li'ishtacha. If the guy became silent, sort of like a stroke, and they asked him, and then he indicates that he should, then we go ahead and write the get. V'leichush dil mashichya dolav lav nakte. Inam mashichya dachen hein hein nakte. Maybe his head is just shaking that way. And so maybe his answers aren't really meaning anything, and therefore, Amar Yosef Bar Manu, Amar Nachman, Damrin Levi Seirugin. You ask him alternatively. You ask him a yes question, then a no question. Yes question, or no question, and you see that he shakes his head and nods his head appropriately, then you know that he is communicating with you. V'lichosh Dilma Shichet Seirugin Nakte. Maybe that's exactly what's caused him. He's shaking his head and nodding it, and that's the disease he's got. So Damrin and they lechad lav train hain. Train lav achad hain. You basically make it random. As you make one yes and then two no's, one no and two yeses, etc., so that there's no way that that pattern could be coincidental. So Tana Bishmoel says, what kind of questions do you ask? You ask him winter questions in the summer and summer questions in the winter. Now, what does that mean? If you think that you ask him, do you want something to cool yourself off or some blankets to warm yourself up? That's not going to help. Maybe he is cold or hot. After all, he's sick. So maybe that's the reason that he's answering that he wants a sheet. He wants a sheet because he's sick. El avepere. You ask him in the winter, would you like some peaches or something? And since he only now got silent, if he indicates to you with a motion that he's not interested in peaches because there are no peaches in the winter, etc., then you know. If you have a cheresh who is able to communicate by writing, so in other words, he's a cheresh who is competent, like many most cherishim are today, then he can divorce his wife. Yosef, my kamashman, what's that teaching? Tanina nishtatek, v'amrilo nechtov get lishtacha, v'irchin b'rosho, that's our Mishnah, that if he became silent, we check him, and if he can communicate with signals, we write the get. No. So Amalei Rabbi Zera, Yilem Kamart. Rabbi Zera says, Rav Yosef, you're talking apples and oranges. The statement that Rav made was about a cheresh, who happens to be able to communicate through writing. Here, you're just talking about a mute. This guy, we have no reason to think that he can't hear us, or he can hear us. That's why he's signaling and nodding. He's just mute. Shani Lame, the Tanya Medaber, Vino Shomer, Zechere, Shomer, Vino Medaber, Zewi Lame. A mute is somebody different. Alright, when we talk Zechereish in the Mishnayot, we refer to a deaf mute. Alright, but somebody who speaks but can't hear, somebody who's only mute, who can speak and but can't hear, that's a Chereish. Meaning the technical word of Chereish. Shomer, Vino Medaber, somebody who can hear but can't speak, Zewi Lame, that's a mute. Vizevizeh, Renke, Pinchin, the whole Divrim, they are 100% competent and considered to be compass mentis. Alright? And therefore, our guy in the Mishnah is just mute. If we can clarify that his mind is still working properly with his answers, then there's no question. But that's not Rav's halacha. How do we know that those are proper words, definitions for those states? So in Tehillim it says, I am like a cheresh who cannot hear, and like a mute who cannot open his mouth. Or like the aphorism people say about what ilaim means, ishtakel milule. What does ilaim mean? His words have been taken away. Alright, good. So Rav Zeira, ikashali hakashali. But my problem with this is the following. Tanya im lo yagid, in the parsha of Shvuat Eidut at the end of parsha of Yikra, it says that if the man refuses to speak, to testify, etc. Pratli ilaim sheinu yachol lagid. So that excludes a mute who cannot testify. Which means you cannot forswear. You cannot administer an oath to an ilaim about testimony that he may know about you. So, but according to you, he should be able to testify by writing it down, just like in our Mishnah. So, if in our Mishnah, we say that we can act based on his words, and here we say we cannot sue him for refusing to testify. You're bringing a dut as a challenge? Shani Edut, Rachman Amar Mipihem, Velom Pik Tavam. The Torah said, Al Pishnai made him. It's based on the words of two witnesses, and not from their writing, which is, by the way, why you can't be testify from a written thing. You can't write a journal and bring it up and testify out of that. So in the same way, he can't testify in writing. The Torah is Gzerat HaKatuv, you have to testify orally. To have a brayta that says that our fellow in the Mishnah who became silent, just as the same way we check him with the nodding the head and shaking the head for gittin, we do the same thing for masot matanot, for giving in transactions, selling and buying, for testimony and for inheritance. All right, which sounds like we accept his signals for testimony. That's talking about Edut Isha. If we saw that this fellow came back and we know that he was with another guy and the other guy's not there, we don't know what happened, and he looks all shocked and he can't talk, and we say to him, is the guy dead? And we do the same yes, yes, no thing, and the fellow testifies that he's dead, then we'll accept that. The Akilu Berabbanan, as we saw throughout the second half of Yevamot and several times since throughout Nashim, the Rabbanan were lenient about that testimony, so to prevent the terrible tragedy of an Aguna. Vaktani Yerushot, but it says Yerushot, which means we think he's testifying that a certain fellow has died so that his children can inherit. Ravau Yerushat Beno Bechor, and all it means, referring to is his own son, that he wants to make his Bechor equal to the rest, or identify who the Bechor is, or something else, which is in his purview. Alright, and so they say, which one is the Bechor? Is it that one? And he signals, so using again the yes, yes, no, no thing, we can clarify. Tani Miyadam Esaotu Matanot, but we also have transactions as part of that braita, which we think means he's testifying about a sale or a loan. My love lauma, l'didei. I'm just saying, yes, I did that deal, I didn't do that deal. And there it falls under the rubric of Bahnat Baldin. So metis, which means, again, bottom line, that an elaim cannot testify. But if he can communicate in other ways and let us know what he's thinking, we accept that as a perfectly valid expression. We don't use his hand motions and his winks and or anything he writes, except for selling and buying metaltalin. We have that in the fifth perek. So how can Rav say that if a cheresh knows how to write something down, that we give a get based on that? The answer is Tanai, it's Machloka Tanaim, and Rav was taking the position that we'll see in a second. That's only somebody who was always a cheresh, which means we have to assume that he doesn't have dat. But somebody who was capable and then became a deaf mute, so which means he has an elemental dat because he grew up as a communicator, he can write it and they could sign it. Right? Which means that Rav is talking about a cheresh who was originally capable, and he's following Shimon Gamliel's opinion. V'cheresh mikaro lo, but we don't allow a regular cheresh to divorce. K'shem shekon saber miza, kach motziaber miza. This we have throughout the parak in Yevamot, but also, again, we had at the end of the fifth parak. Then when a cheresh marries, he marries with kiddushin derabbanan based on hand signals. He can divorce the same thing. The rabbanan can institute a divorce on a rabbanan and on a rabbinically sanctioned marriage. So the answer is, Ibi Ishto Achinami, you're right, he could divorce his own wife that he married as a cheresh. We're talking about his Yevama, who he married, and then he wants to divorce. Yevimto Miman, who'd she fall from? If you think his brother is cheresh, remember, this entire marriage started out as a Darabanan. So you should be able to divorce her with the same hand motions. Ella denafla miachiv pikeach. She fell to him from she was married to his competent brother. Therefore, the kiddushin d'oraita. He then did yibum, and now he wants to give her a get. He cannot do that because he does not have that level of competence. You could even posit that she fell even to him from his deaf mute brother. And what goes there that he cannot divorce her in order to ensure against him divorcing a woman who fell to him from his competent brother would really be a problem. So then why don't you say that he can't divorce his wife as a gzeira against Yevimto? The answer is Yevimto Vivimto Michlafai. You could confuse one Yevama for another. Ishto Vivimto Lemichlafai. You will never confuse a divorce of a Yevama with a divorce of a wife. because Yibama is such a unique and odd circumstance. Therefore, if a Chiresh married a woman, he can divorce her, Beramiza, and that's fine. If a Pikeach married a woman and he became a Chiresh, then he should be able to divorce her also, if we can understand from what he's saying, and that's Rav's halacha, and built upon Rosh Gamliel's position. Okay. But since when are we gozer to not allow that which a chereish cannot do when it comes from a pikeach, when it comes from a chereish, because of it, as a precaution against a chereish where the wife falls to him from a pikeach brother. Vatnan, we have in Yevamot Shneachin. Chershin, nesuin shtei achayot pikchot, or shtei achayot chershot, or shtei achayot achat pikach or achat cheresh. If you have two brothers who are cheresh, they're married to two sisters who are either both competent or both chershot or one of each. Avchen shtei achayot chershot, nesuot l'shtei achin pikchin, l'shtei achin achreshin, l'shtei achin achat pikach achat cheresh. Or two sisters who are chershot, who are married to two brothers, either both cheresh, both pikach, or one of each. So any possible mix there, as long as one of the sets is both cheresh. If the brothers die, the girls are both pater mina chalitza umin hayibum. Vim hayu nochriot, but let's say these girls were not sisters to each other, yikansu, then the brothers can marry them. Vim ratzula hotzian yotziu, they could divorce them. Right? Which means that we find when the girl falls from achiv cheresh, we allow the other cheresh, who did yibum, to then divorce her, and we have to make a gzera against the circumstance of pikeach. El nechvarta kadoshan mikar, so we have to go back to our original answer that it's only when she fell from achiv pikeach, then we do not allow. Now, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, chalukin alav chaver of Rishim Gamliel. Rishim Gamliel, who said that we distinguish between a regular cheresh mikaro and a pikeach v'nit cheresh, his colleagues do not agree with him. Right? Amar Baye, and they say that even if he was born Pikech, became a Chereshi, we still can't use the signals. Abaye Afan and Taninaf, Abaye says we have a right that supports that. Nishtateit, if a girl who he married became a Shota, lo yotzi, he cannot divorce her. Nitchereshi hu, o nishtateh, if he became a Chereshi, again, this is a competent couple, and then he became a Chereshi, or he became a Shota, lo yotzi olamit, it uses a stronger phrase, he could never divorce her. What does that extra word mean? Doesn't that mean even if he can communicate mitoch haktav, which would mean then that position supports the position of the Rabbanan, that even somebody who was originally competent and then became a cheresh cannot signal and that will act based on that? Papa, ilav dashmin and Rabbi Yochanan, if Rabbi Yochanan had not told us that the colleagues disagree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, I would have thought Rishon Gamliel is simply coming to explain the Tanakama and say the Tanakama is only referring to a situation where the person was chereish from the beginning. But, of course, if a pikeach shenit chereish, then everybody will agree that you can use the signals. Right? Umay olamit, and then how would I have interpreted the phrase olamit in that Mishnah? Fagav dechazina le decharif, even if we see the guy, he seems to know what he's talking about, but hasn't yet risen to the level of ability to communicate graphically by writing something down. So as I would have thought, lo yotzi olamit means, even if this guy seems to still be competent, but there's something in the way, we will still not allow it, but of course if he can write it down, then we would. That's what I would have thought. But Rabbi Yochanan taught us that the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's colleagues disagree with him. Inam yidchur b'yitzchak, the other possible way I would have interpreted it is, Dvar Yitzchak, Dvar Torah Shota Mitgareshet. Mida Oraita, a Shota, can be divorced. Mida Dehave Apikachat Balkorcha. Just like Apikachat. A regular girl can be divorced without her consent, therefore no need of consent. Therefore Shota can be divorced. Therefore, we said if she became a Shota, she can't be divorced. If he becomes a Shota, he can't divorce forever. Why forever? Because that's the Oraita. Right, and the first one is Durabonin. What's the reason for? Matam Amru, Einamit Koreshet. Why did they say she cannot become divorced? This, by the way, is machloket, whether or not Shota's inability to be divorced is Exera Durabonin. Shelo Yinhagu Minhag Efker, so they should not mistreat her and abuse her and take advantage of her. Or is it Doraita because Einayodat Lihit Garesh or Lishmor Gita? Two versions. Alright, that we're going to see later on. In the meantime, we will pause at this point at Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Bet. Pick up in the next podcast. Everyone should have a wonderful day.